Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 43, recorded Monday, August 14th, 2006. It's the podcast giving the voice of the traveler, more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast. Here we go again, and old world versus new. Well, this week, coming to you from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, I was going to record this podcast last Thursday evening in the San Francisco Airport Marriott, but I decided to delay it so I could give you a readout on my experiences with the new security regimes that went into place on Thursday. And so, to break the format a bit, we'll jump right into the first topic, which is, here we go again. I woke up Thursday morning in the San Francisco Airport Marriott to the news of the foiled London plot. I looked out my window and was relieved to see planes lined up and taking off over the bay. Turning back to the TV, I watched the live reports from San Francisco Airport, Oakland Airport, and LAX airports. You could see the security lines growing with every cutaway and the frustration growing with every traveler interview. The breakfast crowd in the Marriott concierge lounge just stared at the plasma screens while eating their eggs and oatmeal. CNN on one wall, MSNBC on another, and I don't know, there was this air of, oh geez, here we go again, sort of resigned acceptance, with people trying to figure out how to best deal with the new rules. The folks flying out that morning started eating faster when they saw the lines at SFO. I went back to my room and squeezed out a bit of my Mitchum antiperspirant gel into a water glass and then hid it in the dresser so the maid wouldn't take it away. Then I brought the almost full container of antiperspirant to the project room in San Mateo so I can reclaim it later this week when I get back out there. I don't know, I just can't bring myself to tossing $6 worth of stuff. The toothpaste tube was almost empty, so I didn't have much angst about throwing it away. I sent a note to a guy on my project in Chicago. He was flying out that morning back home to Cleveland. How bad is it? I asked. Flight was delayed, so I skipped the airport and drove. Just didn't want to hassle with it, was the reply. Yet the guy would rather drive I-80 for 7 of the most boring hours possible. He'd rather do that than face O'Hare. Not a good sign. Later Thursday evening, Rich Manwisco of the This Blog Title for Sale blog left an encouraging note on the Travel Commons website. Just got back from my trip to Kentucky, and by the time I passed through Louisville security at about 6 p.m., things were pretty much normal. I did like Rich's observation. Add to the shoe parade and the laptop show until the Pall Mall of Purge. There's just no end in sight. Friday morning, I got up early for my 7:45 a.m. flight out of SFO. You know, San Francisco Airport's been a real zoo on Friday for the past 3 weeks with vacation travelers everywhere. The queue at Avis to return my car gave me just a little sense of foreboding. And as I came down from the tram stop, though, it didn't look too bad. No tailbacks from security. This could be okay. But then it hit. The contractor checking boarding passes at the front of the American Airlines security line turned a half dozen of us away, saying no rolling bags were allowed as carry-on. We were some combination of confused and incredulous. We had read all the signs walking in. We had prepared for the no liquids rule, but no one had told us, no one had heard about a no wheeled bags rule. None of the flyers plastered around the airport said anything about wheeled bags, but this woman was impassable. Zed Vauder commented on the Travel Commons website, unfortunately, the types of people attracted to these sorts of jobs tend to be the ones that want to feel important and control circumstances, and they can sometimes take advantage of just this sort of situation. We trudged back to the counter and waited 20 minutes to check our bags. Once I got to the counter, I asked the American gate agent about this rule. She hadn't heard of it, but said, well, you know, the TSA is changing the rules minute by minute. Walking back to the security line sans my rolling bag, I saw a TSA guy walking by, and I asked him. I said, hey, what's with this no wheeled bags rule? Not our rule, he said. We're fine with rolling bags as long as they don't have any liquids. I asked the woman who turned me back whose rule it was. American Airlines, she said. Well, while I was in queue waiting to, walk through the screening post, I called American. Rolling bags are allowed as long as they fit the dimension limits, the agent said. Now this was getting pretty interesting. No one would claim responsibility for this new rule. I finally was able to dig up a bit of an answer at American's Admirals Club, their airport membership club. A number of us were wandering around trading stories about the security line and wondering, what's up? Is there some sort of new policy going into effect? Finally, one of the American employees behind the counter pipes up. Apparently, American instituted this ban on wheeled bags on their own on Thursday at the height of the crush as a way to move people quickly through security so that no one would miss their flights. Turns out that someone forgot to tell the security contractors that this rule was no longer in effect, especially given that there were no security lines at 10 to 6 in the morning. Finally, I guess some bright spark of a gate agent noticed all the rolling bags being checked and rang up her supervisor, who then realized that they forgot to give the stand-down order in the morning briefing. Sometime around 6:45, rolling bags were again allowed on American flights out of SFO. Bunch of folks had thrown out toiletries, repacked bags, shipped stuff, FedEx, all for naught. No one on Friday had a problem following the new rules, but we just need to know what they are. The only time anybody got a bit cranky was when we were faced with this arbitrary carry-on rule that no one had heard of and that no one would take credit for. I mean, other than that little cock-up, though, it was a fairly normal, if sort of subdued time at SFO, though without the typical coffee boarding pass juggle you normally see on morning flights. Once I hit O'Hare, it was depressingly normal. I got off the flight and lit up a Wi-Fi connection to dump the email I wrote on the four-hour flight. I returned a couple of voicemails and commiserated with a colleague who I ran into in the terminal. He was on his way to Ireland by way of Heathrow and was hoping they'd let him carry on a book to read for the eight-hour flight. So I probably killed at least 30 minutes before walking down to baggage claim for my luggage. I got down but couldn't find any sign to say which belt was going to give up the SFO luggage. None of the screens said anything, so back into another line I went to ask the American Baggage Services person. She pointed back down the terminal to Belt 7. Looking up at the announcement screen on Belt 7, talked about a Houston flight, but no San Francisco flight. So now I'm almost an hour off my flight, still no luggage. I mean, this is the reason people don't check luggage. I'm about ready to take off for another scan of the luggage belts when I see my small, black, wheeled bag that normally fits so nicely in the overhead compartment pop through the black rubber flaps and into the terminal. Was any one thing about this Friday flight so earth-shatteringly bad? No, not really. It was just a piling on of one inconvenience after another. The best quote I read was in Friday's USA Today. An older couple who travel, I guess, extensively in their retirement, described the travel experience now as tedious. That is the perfect adjective. And while for the leisure traveler, you can get over tedious with a day on the beach, for the frequent traveler, and I have 4 plane trips planned this week, up and backs to both Houston and San Francisco, there's no time to get over tedious. It just wears on you. So while I absolutely agree with the need to be safe, I mean, my wife and kids are flying this week also, I just like to do it a smart way. And if we can loosen up the restrictions on at least deodorant and toothpaste, a non-smelly way too. All right, back to the normal flow of things here at Travel Commons. Following up, hey, that first music clip on today's Travel Commons podcast is Persephone by Ethereal. She sent me a note asking me to play her song. I clicked on her MySpace link, liked it, and so there you are. I'll put her MySpace link in the show notes. The cut is also available on the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. So Thursday night, instead of recording this podcast, I recorded one with Chris Christensen. After talking about my search for gotta-dos for my Swedish vacation in Travel Commons number 41, answering the what's the one thing you gotta do when you're in question, Chris asked me to join him on his Amateur Traveler podcast and give his listeners my list of gotta-dos when visiting Chicago, my hometown. We really had a good time. I'll put a link to the episode in the show notes. And also take a look at his enhanced feed if you get a chance. He did a really nice job of syncing pictures to my rambling commentary. Peter Rukovinas sent in a note in response to the story about Heathrow lines in Travel Commons number 42. Peter writes, "Your experience mirrors my own. Back in February, I was returning to Canada and had a transit through Heathrow after arriving on an EasyJet flight from Geneva to Gatwick. I had arranged my schedule to have plenty of room in it for possible delays, and this turns out to have been a wise move. After checking in, I headed over to the security line, and from afar, it looked to be about 100 people in it, and I thought to myself, not so bad. Little did I know. Turns out that this was just the beginning of the security line. As I drew closer, I saw the line snaked around and down and down and around the corner and down and down and around another corner. I'd have to guess there were at least 1,000 people in line. And while it was a pain to join the end and wait for 90 minutes, there was a saving grace. The looks on the faces of all the folks who had just walked the half mile to get to the end of the line and who just couldn't believe that such a long line could actually exist. Well, that was entertaining enough to keep me occupied on my wait. When it came time to plan my family's spring vacation to Portugal this year, I decided to avoid Heathrow at all costs. Fortunately, I lucked into three $300 return seats on U.S. Airways from Boston to Dublin, Ireland. And from there, we caught Ryanair down to Porto, Portugal, for less than $200 for the three of us combined. The airport in Dublin was uncrowded. There appeared to be no lines at all at security during a very busy morning. And we passed through in both directions with ease. Now, not sure if this is universally the case with Dublin, but it seems like a viable alternative for North Americans making a hop over the Atlantic and looking to tie into that burgeoning no-frills airline network in Europe. Well, Peter, thanks for that note, and thanks for that suggestion about Dublin. It's been years since I've passed through Dublin. I'm not sure if I actually remember it through sort of the fog haze of a couple of pints of Guinness that I drank on the way during my wait. But if Heathrow was that bad then, imagine what it was like last week. I mentioned a few episodes ago that I'm planning a vacation down to Cape Town, South Africa next spring. And with frequent flyer points, the options are to connect through Heathrow using American miles or through Frankfurt with United miles. And up until last month, I was favoring the American BA combo, but now I'm leaning toward Frankfurt. As if the lines weren't enough of a disincentive, the idea of flying London to Cape Town without being able to carry on anything, a book or an iPod, or worse yet, the kids without their Nintendos, I'll take that extra hour flight to Frankfurt. Well, thanks to everyone who contributes their thoughts and stories, the voice of the traveler, here to the Travel Commons podcast. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or you can easily post them on the website at travelcommons.com. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Old World versus New. Hey, I've received a number of emails asking me to compare my recent travel experiences in the U.S. and Europe. And I'll tell you, while hardly a statistically significant sampling, and my experiences are all before last week's security changes. Here are my observations. Certainly, the first thing you notice in Europe is that the security screening checkpoints at the airports are a lot less psychotic and more businesslike than in the U.S. No shoes, no shouting, no attitudes. Perhaps it's because they've been at it longer. I mean, I remember 15 years ago, traveling through Europe, thinking that Heathrow and Frankfurt were so much more stringent than the U.S. I think they've stayed the same, but the TSA has swung the pendulum in the U.S. way too far in the opposite direction, and certainly Thursday's new regime takes it even further. I am watching Michael Chertoff on the Sunday morning chat shows has not made me feel comfortable that it's going to come back to that pendulum's going to come back to center anytime soon, unfortunately. But you know, once you're through security, I actually think the U.S. airports are on the whole nicer than the European airports. Now, I'll be the first to tell you that there's a wide variance about that mean. Newark and LaGuardia are complete pits, and O'Hare is certainly no garden walk. But on the whole, when I step away from the big hubs and think about the more sort of mid-sized airports in Europe, Brussels, Stockholm, Geneva, Budapest, and compare those with U.S. airports like Charlotte, North Carolina, Austin, Texas, Providence, Rhode Island, I don't know, I just think the restaurants and the other amenities and sort of even just the ambiance in the U.S. airports, again, once you get past security, are just a notch higher than in Europe. However, once on the plane, the European travel experience again wins out. On the two-hour coach flight from Heathrow to Stockholm, BA served a very nice meal, complete with two passes of the drink card. It was lovely. Last week, on my four-and-a-half-hour flight from O'Hare to San Jose on American, I was lucky to get a soft drink. And the European flights don't have that sort of picnic ground ethos that has become common in the U.S. with kind of BYOF, bring your own food. Now, the new security rules could change that in the U.S., though. No liquids or gels on the plane. It means no mustard for the sandwiches and no packets of dressing for the McDonald's salads. You could be pushing that picnic ground back into the terminal. I also didn't see in Europe sort of the outright slovenness that I see. Is that a word? Slovenness? Sloppiness? Slovenness? That I see on U.S. planes. Well, you know, while I didn't see Europeans in suits or fancy dresses, I also didn't see anyone as bad as the guy I saw last week walking down the aisle. He had a bad case of bedhead, hadn't brushed his hair that morning, he hadn't shaved. I'm guessing he hadn't brushed his teeth. He was wearing a wrinkled T-shirt saying, Michigan, it's God's high five. That's a Michigan joke. I can explain it to you later. He had stained shorts and dirty orange Crocs. Even on EasyJet, which I flew last year, people seemed, you know, at least reasonably put together. However, it's almost reversed on trains. And again, I caveat my comments. I'm dealing with a small sample size here, but my train rides in the U.S., seem to be all business travelers dressed reasonably well, or maybe some upscale leisure travelers. While many of the travelers I've traveled on European trains with seem to be a bit more, well, downscale. But here's the one thing, in all these comparisons, here's the one thing that really puzzles me. What's with the tour buses in Europe? When we were in Stockholm, sure, we saw motor coaches from Germany and Denmark, no problem. That makes all the sense in the world. But we saw ones from Spain. A bus ride from Spain to Sweden? Oh my God. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 43. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The music on today's show is from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com, Persephone by Ethereal, and Ghost by Hollow Horse. You'll find the song titles, artists, and links in the show notes at travelcommons.com. Well, I'm off to Houston tonight. Just ran down to the Wild Oats Natural Grocery Store for some Echodent tooth powder. Tom's of Maine Natural Long Lasting Deodorant Solid Stick, and Jason Stuck Up Hair Styling Wax. Even rode my bike rather than firing up the blazer so I could get sort of that full crunchy granola experience. Anyhow, I'll let you know how these work out in a blog post on the Travel Commons website, since the time between podcasts seems to be stretching out a bit. I'll start blogging some content between episodes, but you know, don't worry about missing anything. I'll still push the best content through your earbuds. If you have a story, a thought, a comment, a gripe, moans, groans, cries of anguish, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, audio files, or post comments on the website. And until we talk again, thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Take care. Bye now.
Home alone, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing ease my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer.